The 43rd story, The Victory of Two Women. Under the shade of a tall and stately palm tree near Jacob's pillar and the sacred place at Bethel sat a woman. Day after day on a rough-hewn seat, she sat under this tree. A group of people were gathered round her. They went to her for advice, for there was many a question which she settled. One person, and then another, came seeking help in their difficulties and their troubles. A young Hebrew girl who had a hard thing to decide said, "I will go to Deborah. She will tell me what to do." Two men disputing over their land said, "Deborah is fair and wise. She will decide for us." They came from far and near, for her fame went throughout the country of Ephraim and even to more distant places. One friend would speak to another friend of the wisdom of Deborah, the prophetess. These were dark days for the children of Israel. They had never had so hard a time since they had entered the land. Some years before, the king of the Canaanites of the north had sent out Sisera, his captain, to fight against them. Down he came with his 900 chariots of iron, some of which had iron scythes attached to them. Against these the Israelites could do nothing. Sisera completely overcame them. For 20 years the Canaanites oppressed them mightily, forcing them to pay large sums of tribute money and making them suffer in many ways. They took away their cornfields and their vineyards from them. Many of the Israelites left their homes in the towns and ran away to the mountains. But they feared to travel by the highways and took winding pathways in secret. They were full of terror and trouble on every side, and they hid in caves and dens of the mountains. The children of Israel had again done evil in the sight of the Lord, and they were suffering because of what they had done. Their army was broken up. They had lost their spears and shields. It was said that not one could be found among 40,000 people in Israel. The chief Shamgar had defended himself by the use of a long pole with a spike at the end, such as the peasants of that country still use. People asked whether, at least in central Canaan, the Israelites could ever again hold their own. Judah and Simeon, down in the south, seemed to have had nothing to do with the other tribes. It was hard for the northern and central tribes to have much communication. The Hittites and the Phoenicians still held many places in the north, and the rich valley of the Kishon was in the hands of the Canaanites. The tribes did not care to unite and help one another. It was much the same as it was with our 13 colonies in America after the Revolution and before Washington was president. Each one lived for himself until he came and inspired and led them. Then they became a united people. It was Deborah, the prophetess, who inspired and led the Israelites in those days of long ago. With a clear and far-seeing eye, she saw they must be roused if they were to be saved. She called to Barak, the chieftain of the tribe of Naphtali. He, she knew, was a strong and skillful leader. His very name, meaning lightning, told what he was, bright and quick and full of energy. The tribe of Naphtali had suffered most from the oppression of the Canaanites. Deborah urged Barak to call his fellow tribesmen and those of their neighbor Zebulun to insurrection. She sent out messages throughout the land with the war cry, "Come to the help of Jehovah against the mighty." She laid her plans by day and by night for this general uprising. From all directions and silently, the men of war were to muster on the hills of Mount Tabor. Barak, ready and eager to gather his 10,000 men, was fearful as he thought of Sisera and his army. With great faith in Deborah, her enthusiasm and her wisdom, he said to her, "If thou wilt go with me, then I will go. But if thou wilt not go with me, I will not go." At once she replied, "I will go. I will go, but remember, the honor will not be thine, for Jehovah will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." Like the German prophetess Velita, of a later day, who roused her people to resist the Roman invaders, like Jeanne d'Arc, the simple peasant girl of France who believed the angels called her to lead her people forth, so Deborah believed in the vision that had come to her of the victory and the freedom of the children of Israel. In response to her call, the scattered clans gathered. With Barak came those of Naphtali and Zebulun. The princes of Issachar came with Deborah, and the chiefs of Ephraim and Benjamin brought up their tribes. A strong band out of Machir, or West Manasseh, came from the east side of the Jordan. From Judah nothing was heard. Reuben and Gilead, or Gad, Dan and Asher refused to help their brethren. The first, on the other side of Jordan, were busy with their flocks. Dan and Asher were by the sea coast, and seemed to have been occupied with their ships and their trade on the sea. They selfishly stayed where they were. But for the first time, the rest all acted together as one nation. Sisera had his chariots of iron, 900 of them. The Israelites were only foot soldiers, rough, wild, and untrained. Their only hope was by a surprise and sudden onrush. But this was prevented by the treachery of Heber, the Kenite. The Kenites were a little clan who had always been friendly with the Israelites since the days of Moses' father-in-law Jethro. They had joined the Israelites and become one of them. But Heber had separated himself from the rest. He was an important man in the colony and had chosen to make peace with Sisera. He now played a mean trick and turned traitor. He sent word to the captain of the Canaanites of all that the Israelites were doing. Sisera gathered his forces from afar and encamped on the plain of Esdraelon by the river Kishon. Nearby was his fortress of Taanach. From the summit of Mount Tabor, Deborah could watch the movements of the army below. The right moment had come for an advance. "Arise, Barak," cried Deborah. "Arise, for this is the day in which Jehovah hath delivered Sisera into thy hand. Has not Jehovah gone out before thee?" Down from the heights went Barak and his thousands. A march of some miles was before them. Sisera's army moved on to a final encampment at the foot of the hills of Megiddo, where was another of his fortresses. The river Kishon, broadened there by the streams from the hills, was spoken of as the waters of Megiddo. Barak and his men bravely went forth, and the battle began. Unlooked for help came to them. A sudden thunderstorm with heavy rain and hail gathered from the east and burst upon the plain. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera, so a pretty poem afterwards said. The rain swelled the waters of the river Kishon, and the plain became a muddy marsh. Sisera's horses and chariots were entangled in the swamp, and the horses pranced and plunged in the mire. They grew more and more confused, and their riders more and more dismayed. At once the Israelites came upon the army and were able to destroy it. They saw in the storm a sign that God was fighting for them, and their courage increased. The cowardly Canaanites were terrified, and the greater number of them were swept down into the waters of Megiddo. The Israelites pursued those who escaped right over the northern hills. One city of Israel, which the Canaanites passed as they fled, gave no help to the pursuers. They let the enemy go by while their fellows went bravely on. It was afterwards said, "Cursed ye bitterly the inhabitants of Meroz, because they came not to the help of Jehovah." As soon as the great panic came, Sisera had left his chariot and his men and escaped on foot. He got off by an unguarded path and fled over the mountains. For 3 days he traveled on, going by ways that were little used and sometimes hiding in caves. He was constantly in fear of being overtaken. Between Hazor, the king's capital, and Kadesh Naphtali, Barak's home, was a large plain. On this plain was a grove of oak trees where Heber and his Kenite clan had set up their tents. They had kept to the simple life of the Bedouin, living as they had in the desert, with their asses and their camels around them. There Sisera thought he would be safe. Heber was his friend. He would go in and rest. As he came near, he turned toward the tents of the women. These tents were more safe and secure from any passers-by than the others. Heber's wife, Jael, the gazelle, stood at the door of her tent. She had been watching his approach. When she recognized the captain, she went out to meet him. As Jael greeted him, she saw he was a fugitive, and she could easily guess what had happened. With the usual Oriental hospitality, she said, "Turn in, my lord, turn in, fear not." Sisera, wearied and faint, went in and lay down in the tent. "Give me, I pray thee," said he, "a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." She opened a bottle of milk, such as that which stands by Arab tents. There in a large skin was the sweet milk taken from the goats or the camels. She offered him a dish, also of the curdled milk, which is often as thick as liquid jelly, and is eaten rather than drunk. With this Oriental token of friendship, Jael not only refreshed Sisera, but made him believe he was safe. He stretched himself on the floor and said, "Now stand in the tent door. If anyone comes and asks, 'Is there a man here?' tell him no." He then went into a sound sleep. As Jael stood by the door, she thought of all this man's persecution of her people. She thought also of her husband's mean betrayal of them, and she said to herself, "Why did I let him in? The pursuers may not get here in time. When he awakes, refreshed and strengthened, he will escape. Then he will again rise in his power. I myself will save my people. I will avenge their wrongs." With no other idea of right, Jael turned to act. A tent pin was lying on the floor. She seized it and the hammer nearby. Suddenly and stealthily, she crept towards Sisera. He was in a deep sleep. She struck the tent pin into his temples, and it pierced him through. Thus she smote him, and he lay at her feet dead. Jael, trembling with excitement, rushed out of the tent. The sound of horses' hoofs startled her. In the distance, she saw Barak mounted on a captured horse in the midst of a company of his soldiers. They were in pursuit of Sisera. She ran to meet them. "Come," said she, "I will show you the man whom you are seeking." Barak went in with her to the tent, and behold, there lay Sisera dead, with a tent pin in his temple. To die by the hand of a woman was the worst fate that could come to a man in that eastern country. At home, Sisera's mother was watching for his return. From her latticed windows, through which the Oriental ladies look, she continually cried, "Why is his chariot so long in coming?" The ladies with her suggested, and she herself thought, that he was detained, dividing the spoils. But her waiting was in vain. She would see her son no more. The news spread quickly of Jael's deadly act. The Israelites rejoiced greatly, for as long as Sisera lived, they were not safe. Deborah's word had come true. A woman had successfully planned the war. A woman had brought it to a victorious end. Everyone praised Jael, and no wonder. To them of that day, such an act was right. To us of today, it must be wrong.